Warning, Eli's on this episode, so you might want to pee before you listen.
Today's episode of The Scathing Atheist is brought to you by ChristianMingle.com, because as far as we can tell, there's no law against advertising for a company against their will. So try ChristianMingle.com, because when I say fuck Christians, it's not always metaphorical. And now, The Scathing Atheist.
So we have a decision to make. Do we believe what an environmentalist group says and choose to live in a world where we're attempting to make everything as clean in the air as possible? Or do we believe what the Bible says?
Hey, this is Paul from the Quranify Me podcast. I've just gotten back working my way through the 7 levels of Islamic heaven, and Allah confirmed that we did indeed evolve from filthy monkey men. Allah's peace be upon you.
It's June 5th.
And there's no such thing as well done but juicy.
No illusions?
He's that right. And from ball game over, Yankees win! The Yankees win! New York, New York.
And Rebels trail at halftime, Podunk, Georgia. This is The Scathing Atheist.
On this week's episode, we'll wonder why Easter candy is being sold in Malaysia.
We'll learn that Hitler's not as bad when you compare him to God.
And Eli Bosnick will join us to discuss that guy who hosted Later with Greg Kinnear.
But first, the diatribe. Ever since I moved to Georgia, I've been looking forward to the missionaries. You know, I could hit the nearest church to my house with a frisbee and the next nearest one with about a 3-wood, and I see these roving bands of Jesus proxies everywhere I go in town, so I know it's just a matter of time, right? And I'm salivating for it. And when it came at the perfect time. It was this confluence of anger and rage that should have been a perfect storm. It should have been a thing of beauty. See, after the surgery, my wife is up and down all night. She's tossing and turning, so I slept on the couch for the first week or so post-op, and it's pretty okay for a couch, but it's still a couch. And about the same time, the AC in my house goes out. So, of course, for that whole period, we get highs in the mid-90s, and for our international listeners, 95 Fahrenheit is 308.15 Kelvin, so it's fucking hot. Anyway, I wake up in the morning to a knock on the door, and I'm hoping it's the repairman, but instead it's a couple of used afterlife salesmen. So I show up at the door, rubbing sleep out of my eyes. I'm wearing nothing but a pair of gym shorts and a sheen of sweat. You know, the perspiration in my hair is congealed into this reverse pillow mold up top. And at that point, I would have been pissed if this was the publisher clearinghouse guys, unless one of them had a background in AC repair. So all the ingredients were there for this epic, heartless, misanthropic beatdown, but there was one problem. The missionaries in question were 3 girls, ranging in age from 14 down to 9. So I'm just staring. The eldest is muttering something about an island and a boat, and she's clearly forgetting the last half of her sales pitch halfway through the first half. So after a bit of stammering, she just kind of asks me point blank if I've made room in my life for Jesus. And I'm still trying to process all of this, so I just said, you know, I like some of his early stuff. Now clearly this wasn't on their flow chart of responses, so it earned me a few seconds of blank stares, so I added, but once he got into that Papa Don't Preach phase, I tuned out. And apparently, preteen Baptist girls don't watch Reservoir Dogs because it clearly didn't ring a bell. But undeterred, Jesus' groupies went on to the next line, which was something about some dead carpenter or another, but I was done making fun of them. It was too hot to try to explain the concept of incorrect and everything, so I just kind of told them, you know, look, I've got important messiahs to ignore, but you're free to come back some other time. Now, in retrospect, it's hard for me to imagine how this was supposed to go in their minds. You know, like, do groups of socially awkward teeny boppers have high conversion rates? Are they concerned that there's somebody in town that somehow missed all of the church signs and giant crosses and Christian-owned business stickers and Bible verses and Christian bookstores and yard signs and bumper stickers and t-shirts and the 11 religious channels on basic cable and hadn't heard the news about their sins having been died for? Did the preacher think to himself, well, if anything will subdue the skepticism of the wayward masses, it's got to be those One Direction fans? And were mom and dad sitting at home thinking to themselves, well, this is a great time to send the girls out unsupervised to the homes of middle-aged men that we've never met? I mean, I know it's 95 degrees out and all, but it's a wet heat. But of course, I know that they know that they're not going to convert me. That's not what this is about. I'm just a prop in this game. The preacher didn't send them out to spread their faith. He sent them out to strengthen it. It's all about cramming as much Jesus as he can in every nook and cranny of their lives. I'm like a vaccine against the people that might challenge their beliefs later in life. I'm an unwitting pawn in their indoctrination. You know, nothing betrays the absolute depravity of religious leaders like their willingness to exploit children. I'm not just talking about the ones that rape them here. I just don't see how anybody can even resolve this in their own head. How can you believe that teaching kids that there really are monsters under their beds is anything but unconscionable?
They're talking about your Jesus.
We interrupt this broadcast and bring you a special news bulletin.
Joining me for headlines tonight is TRAFE enthusiast Heath Enright. Heath, are you ready to scare some swinophobes?
So, here's what I've been doing. I carry a strip of bacon around with me everywhere I go in New York now, and I touch every surface I can with it. So this includes, like, every nice straw in the restaurant, if possible. So if big molecules irrationally frighten you, maybe you don't come to New York anymore. Just the word.
There you go. It's a good thing there's not a bunch of Jews already there. In our lead story tonight, a Utah high school has taken decisive action against inappropriate shoulder-inspired erections this week by photoshopping modesty onto the floozies in their yearbook. Officials at Watch Snatch High School in South Central Heber City, Utah, enraged a number of their female students this year by adding sleeves to tank tops and camisoles to the pre-cleavage chest area.
Seriously? Well, I guess I can understand where these girls are coming from, though. You gotta look good when you're a 16-year-old and you got 8 other younger wives to compete with. I mean, that's difficult. You better show some skin if you're gonna get in there a little bit once in a while.
Now, though they did stop short of going full hijab on these chicks, several of the students were outraged by the changes. To their credit, the school later apologized for not altering more of the photos.
Seriously?
When this was brought to their attention, they were devastated by the fact that some of those little harlots got away with showing bare necks on their yearbook picture after all.
Blasphemy. It might as well be the clavicle fetish section of a porn site, which I had no idea existed, and I just...
Now, I think it is worth noting, and this is coming from a guy that grew up in the scrambled porn whacking era, I can assure these school officials that no amount of digital remastery is going to slow down a teenage boy looking to rub one out.
Yeah.
He's on a fucking mission.
And from the still in denial file, Lifesavers Ministries of Alabama recently put up and then immediately had to take down in public embarrassment a billboard in Auburn with the following two quotes. Number one, he alone who owns the youth owns the future. And number two, train up a child in the way he should go. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it. These particular brainwashing tips were taken from two sources, Proverbs 22:6 and, wait for it, Adolf Hitler. That's right. They put Adolf Hitler on a poster.
You would have to think at least somebody in the ad company would have said something. You know, the guy designing this thing, something?
In the boardroom, like, hands half up, like,
Right, I don't know. The
Hitler,
guys, I know this is your ad and everything, but are you sure you want to go like Godwin's suicide here with the Nazis? I mean, I agree that at least it's an ethos and all, but still, this is not good.
So yes, somehow, nobody foresaw any negative reaction to the name Adolf Hitler printed in huge letters on an enormous highway poster. Turns out, several people in Alabama know someone that's seen a Jew, and they were, of course, mildly offended on their behalf.
I seen me a Jew once. He had one of them little hats and the curly shit and everything.
And from the biggest file we have, sadly, Reverend Terence McClendon, while employed as a youth group leader at the Diocese of Trenton in the 1980s, guess where this is going? Sexually assaulted Chris Naples numerous times during church-sanctioned trips. Naples has filed suit, but according to the diocese lawyer, the church is not responsible because the rapist was technically off the clock during those particular incidents, was the excuse.
What?
For real? This happened?
Well, I guess in their defense, the Catholic Church does have this long-standing who you fuck on your own time is your own business policy, don't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, they're very...
They don't usually get involved in...
Very progressive
people's...
about that.
Yeah.
Now, the off-duty excuse prompted one of the justices to ask, how do we determine if a priest is or is not on duty? The defense lawyer replied, quote, for real, you can determine a priest is not on duty when he is abusing a child, for example, end quote. So, this happens. This really happens. They have a pedophile Scotsman policy, apparently. Clock out if your cock's out. That's the rule. So they're responsible.
There you go.
Keep track of all that, guys.
And in spiritual death by chocolate news tonight, several raging Muslim lunatics are left with cream egg on their faces this week when it turned out that their fatwa against a candy bar may have been premature. The story began last month when the Malaysian Ministry of Health demanded a recall that led to a fatwa against Cadbury.
Wow.
At first, I thought this was inspired by the fact that there's no logical place to start eating those fucking cream eggs without splurting sugar sperm all over your chin, in which case I'd have been behind him with this. I would have been arm in arm with the Muslims on this fatwa, but it turns out it was actually prompted by the detection of a few molecules of pork.
What I like to do for breakfast, though, is break two or three cream eggs over bacon and toast. You can wipe up the sugar sperm with the extra toast, get it all. It's good.
Yeah, right, right. That's important because every sugar sperm is sacred. Now, I know it's hard to imagine Muslims getting the science wrong here, but it turns out that when they tested these candy bars, they didn't adequately control for contamination. Upon rectifying that oversight, the tests came back negative. So, yes, Malaysia is safe from spiritually deficient demon swine once again. Now, maybe the country that's ranked between Libya and Syria on the Human Development Index can move on to removing the piss from the tap water.
Or maybe if they have a minute, they could spend a couple days finding that fucking airplane already. Seriously?
Yeah.
It's not as if it's a tiny packet of fucking peanuts that they serve to you on an airplane. It's an entire airplane. And finally tonight, in Have Your Cock and Eat It Too news, the Colorado Civil Rights Commission has ruled that Jack Phillips, owner of Masterpiece Cake Shop, must stop discriminating against gay people by refusing to make wedding cakes for same-sex marriages. Phillips puts flower-shaped dollops of pink icing on cakes for a living, but he refuses to be involved with gay stuff in any way whatsoever because he's a Christian asshole. Now, it sounds like the demand for homosexual food service is not being met in Colorado because of this. So let's put 30 seconds on the clock. Ideas for a gay catering business. Go.
Okay.
I mean, obviously.
We got to start with the menu. How about some circle jerked chicken?
Ha! Great start. Fantastic visual of the prep kitchen going. All right. Obviously, we got to say something about the tossed fruit salad.
Of course.
And some people do prefer jelly. Most likely Felch's grape jelly, I suppose.
See, I only like that stuff with peanut butter.
Like those gay cream pies. What are they called? Fluffer Nutters in the butter, I think.
Right, right. Or if you go highbrow, they're Santorum balls.
Yeah, that was extremely highbrow in comparison. How about Man on Manchester Tart? Any British people?
Oh, nice.
Queer Masu?
There you go. Perfect.
Sprinkled on top, something.
How about for the lesbian menu, a little queef brisket?
Nice.
Dip it in the queef sauce.
What about brown eye rounds? Donut-shaped triple fudge-pack brownies. Dessert.
Now, Chubway does catering, don't they?
Sure.
The footlongs? Or you can get the really big one and then just circumcise a little bit at a time as you need it.
Nicely done.
Thank you.
How about Epstein's barbecue? Smoking pole food. That's a herpes joke because I'm too classy for an AIDS joke. Go ahead and skip everything I say from now.
All right, how about, I got a good one. How about Rusty Trombone Appetit?
Nicely done, sir. All right.
Thank you. Thank you.
Man. All right, last one. Two guys, one cupcake. I'm done. I swear.
Oh, nice, nice. Now, if I'm not mistaken, the two girls, one cup reference are to our headlines as fat ladies are to operas, so I guess we can close it out for the night. Heath, thanks as always.
With sayonara, bitches. See you next time.
And when we come back, Eli Bosnick will be here to discuss the new film, Little Mr. Monkey Shines. Heaven is for Real is the story of a hard-working part-time pastor named Todd Burpo, whose bills were already piling up before his son needed emergency surgery for his criminally neglected appendix. But just when everything seemed to be at its darkest, he hit upon the idea of exploiting his four-year-old to perpetuate a thinly veiled lie that made him piles of money. Now, adding to those piles of money is the recent theatrical interpretation of his New York Times best-selling hoax, which Heath and our friend Eli Bosnick recently suffered through so you wouldn't have to. So first of all, Eli, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, guys.
It has been too long. And Heath, welcome back to this episode, I guess.
Thank you very much. I'm doing excellent. Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. So the first question is an obvious one. Is heaven for real?
Where do we begin? Can we start with the title?
Let's just start with
Let's start with the grammatically incorrect title, by all means.
At no point during this guy writing the book, submitting the book, did anyone go, oh, it's just real. You know, like, it's just the word real. You know, I'm pretty sure it's for real. Like, are you for real? Yeah, no, that's slang. That's, you don't need that other word.
All right, so what we've got here is a movie that's so bad that on the poster, by the poster, it was already heading downhill.
Okay, so we start the movie, right? And Greg, we just see Greg Kinnear, and he's a good guy. First thing we see, he fixes a door for some free carpet. He teaches wrestling to kids randomly for no reason, and then visits a grave. It's very like, he's the good guy around town. Old Greg. I didn't learn this guy's name at all. He was Greg in my head the entire time. My notes call him Greg. He will never be anything but Greg. So then, now, we find out later in the movie, he's a priest. Or he's the minister. Mm-hmm. But we do not find that out before he gets sent to go give someone their last rites. So the first thing we see him really do in the movie is someone go get the wrestling coach to give a guy his last rites. Cradle! Is his back on the mat? Has he accepted Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior?
All right, so he wrestles a dying man into submission for Christ.
With his son there, which is weird.
So he brings a four-year-old while he's wrestling a dead guy in a hospital. Awesome.
Oh, okay. Let's talk about Redhead McWants the D. The wife in this movie.
Slutty ginger whore.
This movie is two things. It's a guy having a mental breakdown and pretending his son went to heaven, and a woman's quest for the D. She starts out, and you can watch this movie and see, she starts out in long sleeves and like a dress. She ends this movie in a G-string and nipple pasties. Just throwing, she's like got half a douche hanging out of her, and she's like, toss me the vitamin or I will rip your dick off and use it myself, Greg. Right, Heath? Back me
up.
Oh, it's
beautiful. Yeah, Lois Griffin of reality character is great. Great.
Yeah. And then he does his first sermon, and I wrote this quote down. So he talks about a bear and a unicorn. They're with a lion. I'm not going to bore. It's a fucking, I don't know what the point of the story is. The story makes no sense. He's like, once was a bear and a unicorn, and they were in a cave with a lion, and everyone was like, hey, send us out the lion. And the bear and the unicorn were like, I would love to die with you. And then he says, and I quote, some people think the bear and the unicorn story aren't true. Some people think the Bible isn't true. I think they're both true. At which point, everyone should be like, hey, minister, we only think the one's true. We don't just think all stories.
Instead, right? The audience goes into a slow clap, basically. It was awful.
Yeah. But also, what is the point of that story? You better fucking man up and die with your friends. Someone comes after your friend and he's a lion, you fuck him up. You go down. Don't go out like a bitch. So then, totally irrelevant to the movie, there's a weird scene where he's pissing out kidney stones and his friend is like, how you doing in there? And he's just screaming in agony. And the entire theater, they loved it. They loved it. It was Weekend at Bernie's times 1,000 for this crowd. They were like, ha ha, his dick hole's being used as a birth canal. Loved every minute. Then they go to Denver. Now, this was the most important moment in the movie for me. The wife is like, hey, we need a vacation. And he's like, I don't know if we can afford a vacation because we're $50,000 in debt, which they mention constantly throughout the movie.
Oh, this is again, where that unrelenting slut bag whispers something in his ear, which clearly must have been the most awful of sex acts. Absolutely what? Must have been.
This is the moment that I didn't understand. She goes, if you take us to Denver, whisper, whisper, whisper. Which means she's like, I'm going to eat your asshole, right? That's no one
that's
whispers.
Absolutely.
We'll have missionary sex. This is the moment that drove me insane. The kid has, we flash forward in time. The kid has had a fever for 4 days. Right. 4 days he's had a fever of 103. Now, I'm Jewish. I'm ethnically Jewish, even though I don't have invisible friends. Mm-hmm. If you have a fever for 4 minutes, you go to the hospital with my family. So finally, 4 days later, she turns to him like she just realized he has a fever, and she's like, Todd, we have to go to the hospital. And while they're driving there, she goes, faster, Todd, faster, 4 fucking days
right.
later. Like, all of a sudden, it's a rush. So then the kid wakes up, and he has magic powers. Now, again, I want to touch on the skeptical nature of this movie. This kid could not give two fucks that he went to heaven. It's so obviously just a – the story this movie tells is a four-year-old just being like, I'm a graham cracker. I'm made out of graham crackers. I'm afraid of all dragons. And I went to heaven. And his dad's like, holy fucking shit, you went to heaven?
Tends to be the most reliable type of eyewitness testimony, that of a drugged, unconscious four-year-old, you know.
Yeah. We're lucky this movie's not called Monsters in the Closet or For Real.
But, okay, so kid says, I went to heaven. Dad says, oh, okay.
No, not oh, okay. He's like,
oh, really?
I don't know if I believe. It's not even like a I believe you right away. It's like a, I don't know if I believe. Everyone else in the movie reacts normally. Everyone else is like, oh, did you? Adorable. I'm so glad you're better. And Greg Kinnear is like, oh, wow. Did he or did he not? I don't know. Is he really invisible? I can see him, but I don't know. It's just, it's insane. Then we get a flashback of the kid's trip to heaven.
Oh, awesome.
And heaven looks like the opening credits to Xanadu. It's just mist, mist and lights. And then Jesus. So he goes to this psychologist at the local university. And he's like, hey, I have some questions about my son. And she gives, again, a reasoned, not mean, just gentle explanation of what happened. She's like, hey, this is what called a near-death experience. Your son isn't lying. He probably saw these things. It's called a hallucination. You know, it happens. And he goes, he's like, oh, okay. And then he turns around and goes, my son's not a liar. He's 4. To which the character practically turns to camera and goes, what the fuck, man? Come on. I didn't say that.
Well, now, wait a minute. I'm sorry. The evidence that he's offering against the expert in the field is that four-year-olds don't lie?
Yeah. My son's not a liar.
Bullshit.
No, he believes him because then he goes to church, right? He goes to church and he gives the most bum. Listen, I don't know how to give a sermon. I'm not a preacher. He gives the worst sermon. It's like a guy talking out loud to himself on the toilet. He's like, I don't know. My kid went to heaven. Huh? Oh, now I'm on Chipotle. Oh, I don't care how good it tastes.
You should have like Scott Van Pelt and those guys from ESPN analyzing his swing while he's doing it. Just like exhausting. It was terrible. Absolutely awful.
And that gets the paper's attention. And then everybody in town gets in a hubbub. As right they should. Like, in the movie, it's played like, oh, people are dicks to him. But everyone in the movie, one of the guys, there's like a dramatic moment at the diner. One of the guys who's a fellow fireman, as a joke, goes, hey, next time your son sees Jesus, why doesn't he ask him to help us put out these fires? Which is a great fucking point.
Right.
Great point. And he's like, oh, I'm being oppressed.
Even in
no, they're being oppressed by atheist Nebraskan firemen. That's
huge contingency of atheist Nebraskan firemen. I want to talk about this kid's trip to heaven, though. Okay, because all he does is sit on laps. Which means that
he went to Catholic heaven. No, I'm
right.
sorry.
Which means that in this universe, when you go to heaven, you are the age that you are when you die, and you only get to enjoy the things you enjoyed when you died. If this kid had come back from his NDE and been like, what's anal rimming? I'm willing to have a conversation. But the fact that this kid thought that heaven was a colorful horse and sitting on people's laps means he doesn't know shit about happiness yet. If he had been like, who's Asa Akira? I'd be like, all right, kid. I'm ready to hear what you have to say.
But now what I don't understand is, like, where is this I mean, like, isn't this evidence of the exact thing that they profess to believe, though? I mean, like, what do they say? Like, we don't need no pastor who thinks heaven is a place. I mean,
the entire premise makes no sense. They set up a non-conflict, and then they resolve the lack of conflict for 90 more minutes. Like, what would a pastor do if he suddenly found out about Jesus? What would what wacky situation would have there? He'd keep being a pastor and cut. Like, let's wrap it. That's the movie. That was the movie.
Right. So, I want to get to the nameless heaven, baby.
Ah, beautiful.
The beginning of the movie, Red Firecrotch McWants the D. Is, she takes a dress out of the drawer that's obviously a dead, like from the moment I saw it, I was like, oh, a dead baby dress. She looks at it and she's like, oh, you were supposed to be a baby, but you're not. And she puts it back in the box and she gives it to some Mexicans. True story. See the movie. It's what happens. So then she has not believed the little kid up to now because she's used her brain. And the kid is doing his coal channeling bit, which is great, by the way. And he goes, I met a little girl up in heaven. And he's like, she's like, oh, yeah? She goes, yeah, it's my sister. And she's like, your sister's not in heaven. She's like, no, you had a baby die in your tummy.
That's creepy as fuck.
You had a baby die in your tummy is not children. That's not in Frozen.
Red rum.
Dark line for a four-year-old, yeah.
Right. So he's like, you had a baby die in her tummy. And she's like, oh, my gosh, how'd you know? Probably because you take that dress out and fucking smell it all the time.
Wait,
anyways,
he met the miscarried baby in heaven?
Oh, yeah, he did.
Yep.
And he hugged her. And the mom goes, oh, what was her name? And she goes, she didn't have a name. You never named her. Which means that there's 8 bajillion nameless children in heaven just running around playing the world's most depressing game of manhunt.
I guess the moral of the story is that if you're going to sell bullshit to people, sell it to religious people. They have been pre-screened for gullibility.
They have like a Sandlot montage at the end where It's like, he grew up to be a man. And for the kid, all they have is he's a normal teenager, which if the lady does not protest too much, it's like, he's fucking fine, okay? Leave him alone.
Somehow I'm not regretting having missed this one.
Like, there were so many moments in this movie that were just like, I wonder if Jesus likes apple pie. And I was like, oh my God, there are kids starving in Africa. Has no one brought this up? AIDS! What color is Jesus' horse? Who gives a shit? There's a tsunami! Ice caps are melting, you piece of shit!
All right, well, Eli, thanks again. I can hardly wait until another shitty movie comes out that our audience wants to hear you make fun of.
Oh, my blood pressure. Sweet, sweet blood pressure.
Before we abdicate the throne tonight, I wanted to let everybody know that we're getting damn close to our $500 an episode Patreon goal. For those who don't know, when we hit $500, we're going to make a go at doubling the length of the show. So if you want more us, we're only about $33 shy now. You can get us that much closer by visiting patreon.com/scathingatheist and making a per episode donation. Also wanted to remind everybody that I was on the most recent episode of the Imaginary Friend Show podcast. That's episode 182 of Jake's Fine Show, which you'll find linked on the show notes for this episode. Had a blast there with Pete Darwin and Ross from the Skeptically Challenged podcast, and you're invited to listen to that blast at your convenience. I also wanted to remind everyone that every time somebody buys a copy of Diatribes Volume 1, 50 Essays from a Godless Misanthrope, an angel gets his wings, and then gets them thumbtacked to a corkboard for a fourth-grade science project in heaven. You'll find links to buy both the ebook and the paperback at scathingatheist.com. Can't shut it down without thanking Heath for boldly going where no abortion joke has gone before. I need to thank Lucinda for inexplicably failing to divorce me by now. I also want to thank Paul from the Coronify Me podcast for providing this week's Farnsworth quote. If you haven't checked out his fine program yet, be sure to check the show notes for a handy link. But most of all, I need to thank this week's most interesting persons of interest, Dave, Wayne, Derek, Andrew, David, Mark, Allen, Matthew, Richard, Michael, Z, and other Michael. Dave, Wayne, and Derek, whose strength would be the standard unit of measurement horses would use if horses could build cars. Andrew, David, and Mark, whose erections are engorged with enough blood to feed a family of vampires on Thanksgiving. Allen, Matthew, and Richard, whose cocks are so big that even Galactus just works the tip. And Michael, Z, and other Michael, whose names God calls out when he comes. These 12 well-meaning, well-endowed well-wishers have swelled our well-being this week by giving us money. Giving us money takes courage, dedication, and 1.5 to 2 minutes. But if you think you've got what it takes, you can make a per-episode donation at patreon.com/scathingatheist or a one-time donation by clicking the donate button on the right side of our homepage at scathingatheist.com. And if you want to help but you forgot the combination to your mattress, you can also help us by leaving us a review on iTunes or Stitcher or other places as you see fit. Also, sharing our show on Facebook and Twitter and stuff is a great way to prune the humorless asshats out of your life. If you have questions, comments, or death threats, you'll find all the contact info on the contact page at scathingatheist.com. All the music used in this episode was written and performed by yours truly, and yes, I did have my permission. I did like the, I love the 30 seconds this week. That was a good one.
Yeah. If we had been doing gay autism catering services, Five Guys Asperger's and fries would have been perfect. I was so mad that wasn't exactly what we could have done.